learning like how to suffer was something that I've always really struggled with. Like to go to that really dark place and get comfortable there has been hard. And this was the race where I decided, okay, like you have to believe you can win the race. Even if you somewhere deep down, you don't think you can, you got to like fake it till you make it. So that's kind of what this felt like. And yeah, then having it all come together was like, wow, what now?
It's showtime, everybody! Showtime!
You've been living in a dream world, Neo. Yeah. This is the world as it exists today.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.
Listen, we're talking about practice.
Repeat on the dude's run.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
I see. You think this has nothing to do with you.
Don't ever trash talk Black Jesus.
This is the Adventure Stash with Payson McKelvin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm recording this intro from the United States. We made it back a week ago today. I flew back to Bentonville, Arkansas, where we will be basing the majority of the spring. First, though, we made a quick side trip over to Stillwater, Oklahoma for the official kickoff of my race season, traditional kickoff at the Mid-South Gravel. The weekend was awesome in all the ways that Mid-South is always awesome. The race was mostly good for me right up until about 7 miles to go when I had some bad luck and punctured out of the lead group, which was certainly a heartbreaker, is a heartbreaker. But that heartbreak was soothed quite a lot by the amazing event, party, concert experience that Mid-South is. We'll be dedicating a recap episode of sorts to Mid-South next week, interviewing the DFL finisher. The idea is that we're going to prioritize the non-pros, everyone but the pros, really. In our recap episode, we do plenty of chatting with high-level athletes and the pointy end of these races throughout the year on the podcast. But with Mid-South being, in my opinion, one of the leaders in maintaining and cultivating and celebrating the true spirit of gravel riding and racing, it seems right to lean into that as the focus of our recap episode as well. So you can look forward to that next week. And in line with that, we would really love to have you, if you participated in Mid-South, send in some sound bites about your participation. You can email those to theadventurestash@paysonmckelvin.com. The easiest way is just to record a little voice memo on your phone. And yeah, 45 to 60 seconds about who you are, how your experience went, and maybe what you're doing next with your year, what goals you're looking forward to, and we'll put them all together, and that'll be the intro of this episode. But first, we have a couple of more recordings from Girona that we would like to present to your ears. Today, Morgan Aguirre, who was recommended to us by a listener of the show. Morgan, I have to admit, was on my radar as an interview, but we had so many potential interviews while we were over in Girona. I wasn't sure who to prioritize or what order to contact people in. There were kind of paralysis by analysis. There were so many good opportunities. But when this individual, Stephen Davis, sent us a message and really suggested we chat with Morgan, I said, let's do that. Let's bump her to the top of the list. And she was game. She has a really interesting story. A lot of times on this podcast, we chat with people who are extremely accomplished and you know, are in the middle part or even later stages of illustrious careers. But Morgan is kind of on the other end of that story. She's right at the beginning of her pro bike racing journey and on a really steep trajectory and has an interesting story, having been an American that decided to move to Europe and base in Europe despite focusing on gravel cycling. So sit back and enjoy this conversation with Morgan Aguirre from Girona, Spain, and we'll catch you after the show. We are back at Casa Athletic. This is maybe the last podcast I'm going to do here, which is very sad. We've done a good few in the last 3 months since we've been here. This was by far the most epic journey to get to the studio, though, across Old Town. I changed my pants. You didn't bring spare pants. So you're probably a little damp.
Yep.
I'm getting over a cold. You have a broken hand, which you're in denial about. We'll talk about that. So we're a little beat up, but we're here. Morgan Aguirre.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean,
that rolling of the R.
We're in Spain.
There you go.
We're in Spain. One of the reasons I wanted to interview you today is because, I mean, for a handful of reasons, you had an awesome Santa Fe race. You're on this very steep trajectory. You're one of the newer names in gravel racing. But you live here in Girona as an American, which I think is really interesting. And you've chosen to put down roots here and race European gravel as your primary focus, it seems like, despite the sport sort of being born in the US and blowing up there. And so I thought, at a very basic level, that's an interesting story. And I bet there's a whole lot of other things going on in your life that would be interesting to talk about too. So here we are. Thank you for being available on short notice.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So I guess the first thing I'd like to know is, well, just to set a little groundwork, I think in another podcast, you said something like, and then the Girona thing happened where you get to the end of your trip and you either extend your trip or you stay, it would be easy to kind of overlook that comment as someone who hasn't been here, but based on our experience here, that resonated very significantly. We leave day after tomorrow and we are very sad about it. Talk to me about your first time to Girona and at what point this place started to feel special and how it ended up becoming home.
Yeah. It was completely, I wouldn't say random, because obviously bikes are what bring a lot of people to Girona. But I was working and living in Seattle and had kind of started training and was on a team there and thought, well, I have to ride my bike. I can work remote. I've heard of this place, Girona, just sort of from people. Maybe I'll go and see what that's like. I have to ride my bike. Might as well do it somewhere where it's sunny and not in the rain. So I, booked an Airbnb in Girona for like 5 weeks and brought myself and my bike here and figured if I had a bike, I'd meet some people. Ended up here for a while. Riding bikes, meeting people, and just thought it was a pretty special place. And so ended up heading back. I definitely would have, done the extend the trip. Everyone's like, why are you leaving? Why do you have to go? But I had committed to riding with a team in the US for the road season. So I had to get back. So headed back and spent pretty much that whole like next couple months thinking about, okay, how do we make it back to Girona? How do we make this work? And it sort of worked out that my parents were also at the point where they were retiring, looking to move to Europe when they were retiring. And so that was sort of also a, oh, they're going to be here. I'll be here. This was July of 2022, decided to come back permanently, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something else we'll talk about, is just how recent cycling and bike racing is for you, especially at this level. Although hearing a little bit about your story, shout out to the Grodio podcast and Amanda Nauman, by the way. This is where I got a little bit of my research done. It almost seemed like you just ended up racing in the pros. Like your runway from getting yourself a bike to racing at a professional level, I think it was at Redlands that you had one of your first big races. I mean, it was like, was it months or was it a little over a year? Like what is the timeline here exactly? It seems so fast.
It was so fast. And I have to definitely give credit to Fount Cycling, was the team that I started riding with in the US. And I mean, it gave me opportunities that I would have never found otherwise, like riding at Redlands and things like that. But yeah, I remember, so it was 2019 that I bought a bike, for the first time and started riding around. And actually a friend of mine from Seattle, Veronica Ewers, she lives here now. And she was the one who actually saw me on Strava riding and was like, you're riding your bike a lot. Do you want to join this team that I just joined? Like, do you want people to ride with? And I show up to this ride, have no idea what I'm doing. And that was kind of like, the rest was sort of history at that point. had no idea what I was doing, spent a long time getting dropped. And I don't know. I will say, I mean, Jennifer Wheeler, who runs the team now, sort of just, I don't know, believed in me in a way that I had never felt before, never having played sports. That was kind of new for me. And she said, hey, I want you to be on our like competitive team and come race. And so we went to, during COVID, like sort of tail end of COVID, the most random locations. Like we were in Texas trying to get points to upgrade. We were in Florida looking for points.
To get your, like, get through the Cat 3, 2, 1 yeah. ranks. Gotcha.
Exactly. To get to Cat 2 so that we could go to even the races like Redlands. So like, I think like US Nationals was maybe my, I don't know, maybe fifth or so like bike race ever. Huh. Which I'm sure was really scary for everyone else in the peloton.
I mean, you used the system as it's meant to be used technically if you went through the ranks and got your upgrades. But yeah, that is fast. And it's funny you mentioned Fount, because when I was listening to that other interview, I heard you mention Fount and I was like, where have I heard Fount? Where have I? And it was Veronica who has also been on the podcast, and she also mentioned Jennifer Wheeler. And it's all kind of coming back to me that she actually has a fairly similar story in some ways, where she had this really, really quick rise, got invited onto some group rides, and obviously also lives here in Girona, racing for EF on the road. But why did you pick up a bike? You did it a little bit on the later side as compared to some riders who end up in the pro ranks, and you know, often the trajectory, or I should say the entry point, is like NICA and high school racing or collegiate racing, even, or even a childhood interest due to family or friends, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Why did you pick it up when you were in your mid to late 20s?
Yeah. And it was definitely random. I never played sports, ever. I rode horses and speech and debate. I was not an athletic person. No one in my family is athletic. I dabbled in running as like the sort of mid-20s professional does after work and such. So I tried to spin this story a couple different ways, but there's really no like great way to put it other than I broke up with a boyfriend in 2019, and he used to ride bikes. And I try to tell myself all the time, like, oh, I was, you know, started riding bikes because I really wanted to like be better than him at, you know, his sport or whatever. Uh-huh. I'm not sure that that was the case. Like, I think it was maybe a little bit of like, oh, hey, look at me. Yeah. Anyways, I went to the Trek store in Sacramento and rented a bike and decided I was going to ride a bike 50 miles.
Just right off the bat, 50 is what you set for yourself.
Yeah. I had never, and I rented a Trek Silk and rode with my tennis shoes to Folsom. That said, Sacramento is flat. Like, this was like the flattest 50 miles you'll find it anywhere. Started riding a bike. But I think, you know, as one does, they're in a breakup, they're all confused, figuring it out. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to start cycling. And it's really weird because I do look back and think like, you know, there's that one, like you think about that moment in your life, that one thing that you did or that happened that just changed the trajectory of like your entire life. And it's pretty wild to think that I don't know where I would be if we hadn't picked up that bike.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah. Interesting. So what was going through your head during that 50-mile ride? Was it scary? Were you thinking about your ex-boyfriend? You're like, this is the next step to impressing him. Do you have memories from that 50-mile ride? Surely it had to have been like you said, it was a turning point and you were doing something for the first time. Usually memories are pretty rich in a moment like that.
Well, I was on the way to meet a friend for lunch. So I was going to stop 25 miles in. We're going to get some lunch and ride back. So I was thinking about that. But I definitely was thinking about, okay, the Strava upload. Like, what is it going to look like on Strava? And then what am I going to title, you know, the Strava, the ride?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was.
What was the title?
Oh, God, I wish I could remember. I'm sure it's there. I'm sure it's.
Yeah.
It's in there somewhere. I don't know. That's fun.
We should pull that up.
Let's see.
Interesting. So after that 50-mile ride, like, what did that leave you with? Because there are plenty of people that decide they want to try cycling, and this happened a lot during the pandemic. A lot of bikes got purchased, a lot of bike gear. People got into the sport, dipped their toe in, and it's not for everybody. You know, it can be uncomfortable, especially if you don't have the experience to, you know, have good bike setup and pick good equipment. A lot of luck is involved with what that first bike ride can be like. Was it a cool, you know, personal mini exploration, or was it like, ugh, this is suffery?
Yeah. No, and it's interesting now that you asked the question. I guess I haven't, like, I knew why I went on that first ride, but you're right. Like, to get from the first ride to purchasing a bike, mm-hmm. to buying clip-in, like, you know, shoes where you clip into pedals for, I mean, yeah. Who knows? I think it was definitely like a sense of accomplishment. I think when you haven't had sports or athletics in your life like that, I'd never really wrapped my head around like trying something and doing it and feeling good about it. And then sort of the follow through after that. So I don't know, maybe this was the first time, maybe I just needed a hobby, but yeah, it stuck.
Yeah. So then what were the next months like? Were you just fully immersed in the internet doing research in every direction?
100%. Like, and I'm that kind of person, like I love, which I think is what has helped a lot, is I love to learn. Like, and I love to learn from people that know more than I do, which is typically how it works. And I think, yeah, on the internet, looking things up, like I knew immediately I needed white shoes.
White.
Yes.
Man, you skipped a lot of steps.
I know. Dang. I just remember looking at, you know, photos of cyclists and thinking, okay, if I'm going to buy my first, they were like Pearl Izumi clip-in, you know, road shoes. I was like, mm-hmm. They need to be white. I knew that.
Wow. You're still in Seattle buying white shoes in that environment.
I knew I needed them. But sending. I didn't know that I, you know, didn't wear, you're not supposed to wear underwear under your bibs. That took
a second. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Your growth curve was so steep that you were going for the white shoes while you were still wearing underwear under the chamois. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Love it. First race. How did that happen?
That was pretty fast. So I showed up to, you know, Fount ride. Veronica said, hey, come with me. And it was actually, I think maybe her second race. And we went out to, I want to say it was Tour de Bloom, which is out in Eastern Washington. And I got dropped really, really dropped really fast. And it's a miracle that like something like that made me say, oh my gosh, I want to keep doing this. Like that was great.
Yeah.
Okay. Like it was awful, but it was great. And having a team and like women around me that I really looked up to helped a lot. But yeah, it was quite an experience.
Yeah. So did you have any understanding that this was a professional sport and that was something you wanted to work towards? Because it's so interesting to just go from, because again, there are plenty of examples of folks from other athletic backgrounds crossing over into cycling and realizing that they like it more, or they excel at it more. And because they're at a high level at that other sport, they want to try to be at a high level at this sport. But it's really interesting to me that you, like, so far, and it seems like this was the case when you moved to Girona also. And I think, did you, you did a study abroad program I saw.
Yeah.
So it kind of seems like you really go for it with stuff. Like you're willing to take leaps of faith, try things that are, I don't know, maybe a little bit scary. At what point did racing at a professional level kind of come to mind as something that is even of interest or a goal?
You know, I think it's something that's still like coming to mind. I think, you know, in the beginning with Fount, I knew I was riding with women that were really strong. I knew, okay, maybe there's something there, but I was always, you know, I was the slower of the strong ladies, which I think only makes you faster. Like I think riding with people who are faster than you makes you fast. But I was also riding with people who also all had full-time jobs. So at that point it was still wow, everyone's really cool and really fast and really strong, but we're all working. And I remember clearly that, you know, Veronica, she was the one who said, I want to be a professional cyclist. Like, this is what I want to do. And we all looked up to her like, that's amazing. You go do that, but that's for you.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
we're all going to, you know, do our jobs and race and yeah. do that. I think it was just because I thought that wasn't something that it could do. It didn't seem like an option at the time. And so, yeah, even moving to Girona, like, I definitely didn't come here thinking that I was going to compete with professional cyclists. That was still kind of not on my radar. And I think it's still something I'm kind of coming around to. But yeah, it was never the intention or the goal. And now it's something I think about and think, wow, like that's would be amazing. But it's taken a while.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about this commitment to moving here. I think it's really interesting, especially in light of what you just said, that you didn't have professional racing necessarily as a front of mind goal, because I come here to Girona because it is one of the highest concentrations of really good riders and it has unbelievable riding and mm-hmm. it's a great lifestyle. It's just a very good environment to have to chase your goals on the bike and have a good life off the bike too.
Yeah.
But coming here in your position primarily just for reasons other than chasing professional racing is pretty interesting to me. Because even, I mean, we'll talk about Santa Valle later, but even at that race, for example, I was struck by how serious and focused the non-pros seem to be. And I think European racing is such a, it permeates European culture so much. Like it's so much more of an A-list sport as opposed to cycling in the US, that professional racing attitudes often seem to permeate more of the entirety of cycling, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So I'm curious what it was about Girona, if you weren't hyper-focused on being the best cyclist you could be at that point. And it sounds like it was a little bit more of a lifestyle thing and something you were just really enjoying doing. What was it about this place, Catalonia as a whole, that just really, you know, captured your heart?
Yeah, I think definitely, and it's funny because I definitely came here with the intention of cycling less seriously. I mean, it was kind of like I was leaving the road scene that I was doing with Fount and, you know, left the team because I was coming here and I wasn't going to join a road team here. I just knew for me, like that racing road in Europe was not where I was. And I didn't believe in myself at the time enough to even pursue something like that. So it was.
Did you not just have interest or were you intimidated by that aspect?
Probably both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely probably both. And I had actually just right before coming here raced, or fairly soon before raced Belgian Waffle Ride San Diego. That was my first gravel race. And thought, okay, maybe gravel is like something fun to do, but it definitely wasn't the reason to move. I think, yeah, it was kind of chasing a lifestyle maybe. And looking for something new. I knew I liked bikes. I loved the community. I liked being able to connect with people easily about this common interest, which was cycling, whether that's, you know, the professional level or that's just because you like bikes. But, yeah, I wouldn't say the sort of professional aspect was the goal. It was just, this is a cool place.
And yeah. So what do you like about it other than the riding being absolutely world-class and all of the other great bike related things? What do you love about this area?
You know, I think Girona is special. What makes it special is the community. And it's kind of hard to separate bikes from that community. So I think for some of the same reasons that Girona is an awesome place to meet people and is such a great place, you know, for that reason also, there are things that I know some people don't like, right? It's a small community. But it was just like the openness to new people and accepting new people, making friends, like all of that. I think it was just, yeah, a very cool place to be. I would say the people are what made it somewhere I want to be. On top of that, my parents, like I mentioned, had also just moved to Europe, decided they wanted to retire in Portugal. They were there for all of like 6 months before they decided, I actually want to be in Spain.
Okay.
So they actually live like 5 minutes from me now.
Oh, really?
In Girona.
Whoa, yeah. No way.
Yeah. Fun. So also made it kind of like a, okay, well, now it's just my sister over in the US. So
she's probably wondering what is going on with my family.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, as far as transitions to a different country go, Jerome, it, I think, definitely makes it easier. Mm-hmm. Certainly in the last few years, it seems to be the case. We had Christian Meyer on not too long ago, who was here. He was one of the first pro riders to come here in like 08, 09. And apparently it was, I mean, I'm sure on long rides, you'll stop in at a cafe somewhere, you know, whether it's like, I don't know, Figueres or whatever. And it's very interesting how different other towns are compared to Girona. Girona is just so English speaking and, you know, very much a tourist destination and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it seems like a special opportunity to just kind of be able to drop in and have a different country feel easy. Yeah. Sometimes I feel a little guilty for that, but obviously there's plenty of opportunities to go immerse elsewhere.
Totally.
So anyway, all that to say, it doesn't surprise me that your folks decided that this was a pretty sweet place to retire.
Yeah. No, I think it's, I mean, and like you said, I think they're obviously respecting the culture and the local people and the people that are here. And I think that's huge. And so trying to balance, you know, the cycling and the community, the expat community, along with, you know, the existing Girona community. But it's a pretty special place. And I imagine it's going to keep growing and hopefully stay that special place for a while.
Yeah. So all that said, when you look back across the pond, I know you haven't done much gravel racing in the States. Do you have any races in the US on your schedule this year?
I do. Yeah. So I have Unbound and Oregon Trail are on the calendar just because they're kind of close to each other. So I'll go for a month and do that. Yeah. But no, otherwise, I've done Belgian Waffle Ride San Diego twice. And that is about the extent of my US gravel experience.
Yeah. 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 So I can't really ask you what your perspectives are in terms of how the sport is like developing over there versus here, since you're so plugged into this scene and haven't raced in the States all that much, which is interesting. But actually, now that you say it, you know, I feel like BWR California is probably the most similar to some European gravel races, with a big road sort of feel scrum in the beginning. And then, you know, these long road sections and technical, technical bits. So you going back for Oregon Trail makes me think that you're kind of angling for the Gravel Earth series a little bit points wise. Is that part of the motivation also?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the goal. I really think that Gerard does such an awesome job with his races. And I think, is just, I mean, again, I can't compare it to the US, but, does an awesome job. And I want to definitely take part in that series. And obviously the Lifetime being a US focused series, I think the Earth series is kind of sort of the other side of that, the European side of that.
For sure.
So.
Yeah. And it's cool that to an extent it's kind of straddling a little bit, you know, there's a couple of, well, I mean, it's truly a global series, which is really cool. You could almost argue that it's the only like true global series right now. The UCI series obviously has races globally too, but maybe not quite with the same diversity that the Earth series does. Are you planning to target any of those other more far flung events, like any of the ones in Africa or Iceland or anything like that?
Yeah. So we'll do the Rift. That's what I'm super excited about. And yeah, you know, I'm not sure that I'm quite cut out for migration.
Okay. Explain.
I think that's the one race that I'm like, you know, I just, it's kind of the same way I feel about like ultra cycling. I'm like, yeah, I just, you know, I to some extent I like to sleep when I race, and I just, I don't know. That's the one I've heard from people. Like, it sounds incredible, but I don't know about the whole, it sounds like quite an adventure.
Yeah.
Quite an adventurous race.
For sure. For sure. okay. So speaking, you mentioned Gerard a minute ago.
Yeah.
I should say they, all of Classmark is doing a really awesome job over here. And one thing that I've noticed is he's not shy about making his courses really challenging, which I appreciate. You're sitting here in a cast. You crashed pretty hard pre-writing the Traka course, which I also did. It ended up not needing a cast, which is nice. I'm very sorry for you. Hope you're healing up quickly. Sounds like you have a broken hand. Talk to me about Traka. How does that fit in? It's a race in Girona. It's kind of, depending on who you ask, maybe the second only to Unbound in terms of global hype and participation at this point. I'm really excited to be coming back for it. Do you sort of have that circled on your calendar as a priority equal to Unbound, greater than? I'm really curious about, you know, just as this sport continues to grow, the directions it's going to, the emphasis is going to go. Because as we'll talk about, maybe next we'll talk about Santavai, it's really interesting to see just how much individual races change every year. Mm-hmm. And I think Traka is like, seems like quickly catching up to Unbound in terms of how much emphasis all of global gravel puts on an event. So talk to me a little bit about maybe your course impressions, how the crash happened, and how you plan to prioritize that race this year.
Yeah. No, I mean, the Traka is a very cool race and it's grown so quickly and changed very quickly, which is awesome. And that just, you know, is a testament to the work that Classmark has done. It's a very cool course, as are most of the courses they put together. And like you said, yeah, definitely technical. I wish I could say that I like crashed on a, you know, super difficult section, or it was rocky, or it was fast, but unfortunately it was none of those things. It was neither the first steep descent nor the last steep descent. It was like, you know, one of those moments where you're chatting, you're a little more relaxed. It was flat, you know, around a corner, and just lost the wheel and put my hand on the ground first.
Ugh.
So, yeah.
Going around a turn, just a slippery corner.
Yeah. Just dang. Totally not thinking about it. So,
yeah. You made it all the way through Santavai without an issue.
I know. Yeah.
Dang.
And then that was it. And I was like, oh, God. But better now than later, maybe?
Yeah, who knows? Fair. Probably true. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of challenging courses, Santavai, from my standpoint, putting myself in your shoes, I feel like if I was newer to the sport, the bike handling skills would be maybe the thing that builds more slowly than the fitness. I don't know. But the fact that you won stage two kind of blows my mind. You did win stage two of Santavai, mm-hmm. right? Okay, so for those that don't know, this was a three-day stage race. First day, they called a prologue, but it was mass start. It was like 4-ish miles, hill climb, crazy, really exciting format. Day two was segments. So it was 2-time segments that I can't remember exactly how long they were, 30, 45 minutes, something like that. Super technical, even so there were single track sections, but the sections, it seemed like basically all the sections that were not single track were also weirdly technical, just kind of slippery, a lot of ruts. Here in Europe, everything's twisty, tight. And day three was a more traditional kind of gravel stage, but still technical. But the fact that you won stage two is amazing to me. Congratulations. Talk to me about your experience with Santavai. What was it like? Because last year you had promising results. I mean, just to be starting the world championships, making the team is amazing. Having, you know, major entry into the sport so recently. But like now you're getting results, like real front of the race, podium wins. Santavai is a little bit more of like a preseason warm-up race on paper, but the field was so competitive. Talk to me about what it was like to be at the front of a race and proving to yourself that you can be at the top level.
Yeah, it was huge. I think I'm still kind of struggling to figure out myself, like what it was. Like, was there one thing, or was there, you know, what was it? Because I, you know, last year, yeah, we like, there were a couple little sort of moments here and there that I thought, okay, maybe we can like, we can make this work. And then ending up on the world's team was unreal and super cool. But I definitely felt like, oh my gosh, I'm here with all of my idols. This is great, but like they're here and I'm here and I'll do what I can. But you know, there was sort of that gap. And yeah, I think this was the first time I've ever been at the front of a race. And it felt different, and I can't say exactly what it was, but I will say, you know, definitely Sanctify being here, knowing the course, didn't hurt.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think I've sort of the last couple months, like really turned sort of a mental stone, and tried some things that I haven't before. I think, you know, visualizing the race, writing down each kilometer, like I knew the prologue, I knew each kilometer of the prologue. I had written it down. I had written down like what this corner was going to feel like and what that corner was going to feel like. And these are things I've never done. And I just thought, you know, let's give it a go.
So is this stuff you're just coming up with on your own, or are you picking this up from some of your friends that are high level racers and you know, tips and tricks that they say work for them that you want to try?
You know, a little bit of both, but I would say mostly like listening to podcasts, reading books. I think the mental side of the sport has always been the toughest part for me. I think there's a little bit of physical in that, you know, the longer I play sports, having not done so before, not built an endurance engine, the better it is. But I think for me, like also not having played sports, learning like how to suffer was something that I've always really struggled with. Like to go to that really dark place and get comfortable there has been hard. So yeah, definitely reading, listening to podcasts, just trying new things. And this was the race where I decided, okay, like you have to believe you can win the race. Even if you somewhere deep down, you don't think you can, you got to like fake it till you make it. So that's kind of what this felt like. And yeah, then having it all come together was like, wow, what now?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting you say that, 'cause I've talked to a couple of other racers over here, who raced on the world tour for a long time. And they have talked about how the difference between winning a race and finishing, you know, top 10 or whatever is very frequently just the mindset, like the willingness to just take the position you need to be in at a critical point. Because racing in the States, it's like, it's so wide open typically that if you need to be in a certain position, you just go around the outside. And if you have the legs, you're probably going to win. And here there's so much more racecraft required to be successful. And it's really interesting to me just to kind of put myself in your shoes, where you're going through this process where you don't even know if you want to race at this level per se. Okay. Seems like you do. And then you're figuring out, whoa, I have the legs to get results, and then figuring out how to use those legs, you know, where to place yourself, the confidence you need, you know, the course knowledge, like you're saying with the hill climb, for example. Mm-hmm. Have there been any points thus far where, you know, you try something, or maybe you're in a race situation and it gets really sketchy and it's scary? I don't know if you've had any crashes in races or anything, but have you had any doubts yet? Have you had any experiences in races where it feels like the sport's kind of pushing back a little bit and you're like, maybe I don't want to stick my neck out there in this way to chase results?
Yeah, you know, I think, yes, I think I've had doubts and all of those fears until just a couple weeks ago. Okay, cool. So I think I'm still there. But you know, I think the biggest also maybe example that I keep thinking about and I will keep thinking about through this year, and probably why Traca is definitely one of the top races this year, is that, so last year, Traca, I knew it was a big race. I knew I was going to be here. So it needed to be a big race. But unfortunately I ended up with food poisoning that week before. Like I just, nothing stayed down, ate nothing the whole week, felt awful. And then by Friday, I guess it was Friday the night before, I like finally could eat some food and was like, I mean, I'm going to race my bike. Like I'm here. Like I have to at least show up. So I had had like a full meal the night before for like the first time. And I figured, you know, we made race weight, right? Like hadn't eaten all week. Just kidding. That's terrible. But yeah, so wasn't necessarily going in the best from the best place. Was going out there to give it a try. And the second that race started, it was over for me. Like that hectic, the start was crazy. It was hectic. Didn't know where the women were. Thought they were all gone. Assumed I was like way far back there. And I just like, I gave up.
Huh? Yeah.
Like 20 minutes into that race, I threw in the towel and decided I didn't want to be there. And I decided I was the end of the race and that was it. And I was going to just get to the first feed zone and be done with it. And I gave up. And meanwhile, now I know more. I know people in the scene realized, you know, I was ended up in the flat section in between. I was in a group with G, who was very strong, and some other very strong women. But at that point, like I was so mentally checked out. I thought
Sorry, quick clarification. G, not Geraint Thomas, who also goes by G. G, and I can't remember her first name right now. Who's on SD Works?
Yes.
What's her name?
G. Geraint?
I'm putting you on the spot. I'm sorry.
I know I'm saying it wrong.
It's fine. We'll call her G.
Yeah, I just say
anyway,
G.
Anyway, there's another G in professional cycling now who someone else I want to do a podcast with because she also has a really interesting story. But anyway, I just wanted to clarify that you weren't in a group with Geraint Thomas because most people listening will be like, oh, G. Wait.
Oh, G. Oh, wow. She must have been flying. Jeez. No, G, who, yes, super strong, very impressive athlete. And she ended up, I want to say fourth overall, or she did extremely well in the race. But at that point, like I was so mentally out of the race and done and had like thrown in the towel. Some girl I was with in the group, she got a flat, kind of like crashed, got a flat. So I stopped to help her. So I was like, oh, I'm done. My race is over. Like here, I'll just help other people out. Like I was just so done. And it's one of those moments now that I look back and I think, wow, like, you know, I've learned from it. Like I threw in the towel and I gave up. As much as I wanted to pretend that it was that whole week of feeling terrible and I was sick. And yes, I was. I think at the end of the day, like I mentally wasn't ready to be there. And that was sort of where it ended. And I think that's the moment I think about and will continue to think about this year is like just being mentally switched on. And like, I will not finish a race because I don't feel like it. So
that experience last year ate away at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't like that feeling.
No. Especially once I realized it's something that I can control and it's within my control to like flip that switch back on.
Yeah. See, I think that's kind of getting at what oftentimes puts folks down one athletic path versus another. Is there's like this pride element of you knew you could have done better, but you didn't, and you can't live with that. And so the next time you don't let that happen. So that is interesting.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of like also realizing it was within my control. Yeah. Like there's a lot of like, I think in sport in general, you know, oh, it was this and it was that. And like, I could have said, oh, it was the food poisoning, which sure didn't help. But like at the end of the day, it was me that just gave up.
Yep. Okay. So speaking of your growth as a competitor, and going back to Santovai on that stage two that you won, where we had these two time segments, it was kind of a funky format in terms of they sent the women off before the men and it was a little unclear how that was going to shake out. And we ended up is because there's this neutral section in the middle. And our lead group of men, which was massive, by the way, I couldn't believe how many were rolling together through that neutral in the middle. I was like, oh boy, this stage two is going to be interesting. But there was this lead group of women that we hadn't caught yet. And we did halfway through that stage two through a hike a bike section.
Yeah.
And I think you were leading. So what's interesting to me there, I mean, it wasn't ideal for anyone, but I don't think it ultimately affected anyone's races. Did you feel like it affected y'all's race at all?
No.
I didn't feel like it affected our race, really. So in a way, like in hindsight, I'm almost glad that I got this little peek into your race. So to set the scene, you're leading. You had one of the Pall Normal ladies in there who ended up doing really well overall. G, SD Works G. Mm-hmm. Ashley Moolman Pasio. Which is just crazy.
What?
Yeah. Shout out to her crazy good ride at Strada Bianchi last week, despite some bad luck. Yeah. Who else was in there? It seemed like you had a group of maybe five.
Yeah, so it was Clara, G, and Ashley.
So four.
Yeah. And XL from Groove.
Okay.
Yes.
Where I'm going with this is that section was for sure the most critical or selective of that day. And I remember before that day setting a pre-race goal, because I did this race last year, of leading through there. The fact that you had the confidence to be leading through there and you were the one on the front foot, in theory, pushing the pace, trying to make the race happen, is amazing to me, especially with people like Ashley Moolman Pasio in the group. Like, that is incredible. Talk to me about your mindset during that race weekend and how, like, do you already feel like bike handling is a strength for you? Cause that stage was majority single track, super gnarly, and you're on the front.
Yeah. I do like the technical stuff. I don't know why. I can't quite say why, but I do enjoy it. I think the single track is fun. I don't know. Part of me is like, maybe horseback riding, maybe there's some like balance involved there. Who knows? But it's funny that you mentioned being on the front as like the confidence to be on the front. Cause I think for me going into that section, I had just been dropped descending that really gnarly descent with the rutted out kind of areas that if you hit something the wrong way, I'd just been dropped there. We get into the single track. And then there was a point I saw to get ahead and put myself ahead on the single track. And I think, again, it's funny, you see it as sort of a confidence thing. For me, it was almost, I know that some of these people might be faster, so I'm going to put myself ahead of them.
No, but see, that's already, I get that. I get what you're saying, but that is such a killer move already. Like, there are so many people who would just sit at the back and try not to get dropped. But the fact that you had the confidence to get in the way and control the pace, especially with a bunch of women who have a lot more experience than you is unique, I think. So I'm curious about that mindset. Like, where are you? Like, do you see yourself as like kind of turning into a little bit of a killer? Like, are you someone that just takes the wheel in a sprint, for example? Like, you know the wheel you need to be on and you just take it? Or like, how is that? Is it just instinct? Like, what? How are you learning these things? Because these are things that people who have been doing the sport for a decade and like get tired of being in the wrong place at the wrong time do. They're like, okay, I'm going to be a jerk. I'm going to put myself here, but you're already doing it.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting you say that because I never thought about it that way. But I think, I think knowing the course and knowing where I wanted to be, but I think it's new. I think I spent a lot of time at the back trying to hang on and getting dropped. And I know what that feeling is like. That now I've realized if I have the fitness, I might as well try being at the front. And I think this race really taught me like, it's actually nice. Like, it's nice to have control versus not have the control. And I think, I don't know. I mean, like I said, sort of the mental game, and I've spent a lot of time reading about sort of how to control your mind when things hurt and how to do the hard thing. And so it's new, but I think, I'm realizing that it feels better to try it and maybe it doesn't work than not try it at all and end up at the back and end up, I mean, gosh, have I done like the yo-yo off the back?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So there'll be plenty of people listening who are even earlier in their bike riding journey than you right now. So I think it'd be interesting for folks to hear a little bit of let's go down another layer as to what you're talking about in terms of figuring out how to control your mind during these you know, it doesn't have to be bike racing, just being in control when something's hard, and getting the best out of yourself. So where are you educating yourself with these things at this point? I mean, Girona is an amazing place just to literally, it sounds ridiculous, but literally pick up anecdotes at the coffee shop. But I assume you're doing a little bit more than that also.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, I loved like listening to podcasts, reading books, listening to audiobooks. It's funny. I started like, and I'm not sure if he's, you know, the best example, but I started listening to some book by David Goggins about like, you know, crazy Navy SEAL experience. I'm like, well, you know, if he can like run in and out of the ocean for 5 days straight and not sleep, like I can probably get up this single track first. Like, I don't know. Fair. So like some of that. And I think, for me, it's also been like I think when you come in feeling less prepared or feeling like maybe you don't have the fitness. I mean, showing up to this race, I thought, oh my gosh, the name's here. Like there's no way. But I knew what I could control was how well I knew the course, how well I did all the prep. And so I think being new to the sport, it's been super helpful to realize control what you can and the rest, you know, is what it is. And I think as you grow in the sport, you realize there's more and more that you can control. But yeah, I think that was big for me going into this race was I can't control who shows up at the start line. Yeah. And never in my life did I ever think I would drop any of them on a climb, but I did know what I could control, which was, you know, knowing the course, like sleeping well, eating well, training, like all of those things. So controlling what I could. And I think that's important coming up in the sport as someone who, you know, when you don't know where you fall or where you stand, focus on you and not everyone else.
Yeah, for sure. So has this adjusted expectations for you at all for the rest of the year?
Yeah, no, it definitely has. I think, and like I was mentioning, I think Traca now, like definitely an triple A race, which, but again, for that same reason that like, you know, I'm from here, I can know the course. I can know, like I decided, I'm like, I will know every grain of dirt on that course because I've slid across it. No, just kidding. And so, yeah, that's a big one, but I think definitely adjusted expectations. Like I never would have thought I had some of the opportunities that now seem sort of within reach this year. And so that's a cool thing to think about. And stuff like, I don't know, I wouldn't have even really started thinking about next year. And now I'm already like, oh, well, like, okay. So what does the next year look like? What could sort of the planning for the future for sure.
Yeah.
Expectations yeah. adjusted.
Yeah. So other than this really exciting growth phase and kind of exploring what you're capable of, I mean, there's so much learning that you can do in this sport, of course, at any level, at any professional sport, I feel like it's just a lifelong or a career long learning experience. But, in order to stay in love with it, you know, in theory, most people need some balance. Everyone kind of falls a different place on the spectrum of how much time, what percentage of their lives they can dedicate to the sport and still be happy versus, you know, needing other passions, other inputs. I assume you're just like, it's such an exciting phase right now that you're spending almost all of your waking hours learning and training and kind of just seeing how good you can be. But how else are you spending your time? What are some of your other interests? And do you have like balance in the back of your mind at all yet? Or are you on such a steep, you know, learning curve that you're just totally focused?
Bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, and I don't know if it's because I'm newer to the sport that I wouldn't say like burning out is something I've, you know, thought about. And maybe it's only because yeah. I feel like I'm so, you know, had I come from sports or been coaching and things like that for years and years, like maybe that would be a bigger concern. But yeah, outside of cycling, I mean, I love to cook, love to bake. And I think as far as, you know, when you're in Girona, you know, a lot of different cyclists, a lot of different types of people, like from super pros to gravel cyclists and like everything in between. So I would say as far as the spectrum of cyclists go, I definitely am careful to like divide my time. You know, I'm not one to say no to like going out with friends or having some drinks or, you know, just spending time with people outside of bikes. And I think it's cool that Girona allows you to do that. So, yes, I do think a lot about bikes, but I also enjoy not bikes, and time not doing bikes. And I think, again, maybe because I'm later into the sport that, you know, I'm not too worried yet about the balance because I'm not sure if I spent enough time doing it yet.
Yeah. No, I mean, it totally makes sense. You still are working part-time, it sounds like, in graphic design. Can you describe what you're doing there a little bit? Who do you work with and what sort of work do you do?
Yeah, so I was working for a tech company when I came here that allowed me to be remote, and that was great. Then I decided, okay, want to like ride bikes a little more, work a little less. So stopped doing that. And now I am doing freelance work. So just freelance kind of graphic design work. And graphic design is actually is new, something I went back to school for during COVID when the world ended. I thought everything stopped, like maybe I'll go back and pursue another passion. And so, yeah, I've been sort of doing freelance work, like using Upwork and Fiverr, and doing just graphic design projects kind of here and there, but, nothing too committed at the moment. That will need to change at some point soon.
Yeah.
But I will say like being in Girona is very different. Like it's something I would never be able to do in Seattle just because life costs a lot more money there.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that is one thing that's interesting. I got a weird comment, or I can't remember if it was a comment or a message not too long ago, where someone seemed like very perturbed that I would have the majority of my races in the States, but we would have the audacity to move all the way to Catalonia for the winter. And like, sure must be nice to make so much money that you can just like throw it away and move to. And I was like, well, as luck would have it, it's a lot cheaper here, like way cheaper. Anyway, I just thought that was kind of funny.
It's like a smart business decision.
It is. I mean, it is. It's literally like the amount of. Yeah, I mean, we don't need to go into the details.
Yeah, we shouldn't tell everyone. Like, we should keep it on the down low. Like,
including the international flights, we still come out way ahead as opposed to doing even like Tucson, which is one of the cheaper options in the States. Anyway, one thing I'm curious about, and we'll start wrapping it up soon here, but you're on the Enough cycling team, which I know Maria DeMarchi a little bit just from the races. I don't know any of the other riders on the team per se. You have one other male teammate that I race with some.
Oh yeah. Frank.
His name's Frank.
Yeah.
It's well, very Italian.
No.
What's it? What is, do you know his
better?
Okay.
Francesco.
Okay. I was going to take you off the hook, but
no.
Good job.
Francesco.
It from the outside, it seems like a very Italian team. Like, I love one thing that I think Italian cycling as a whole does really well is it's very romantic and they do an amazing job with aesthetic sense and the traditions of the sport. And it seems like that's something that's very important to the culture of Italian cycling. And many of the brands and the way that they, you know, as a graphic designer, you probably notice, you know, different ways that Italian brands handle marketing or design is a little bit different in a really fun way that I really respect. What is it like to be on that Italian team? It seems very like, I don't know, suave and Italian. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, this is new obviously as of this year. So like people I've spent time with now for two races, but I think there's enough. The goal is to make sure that people know that like the bike is enough. That's sort of where the word comes from. Uh-huh. And I think it's a great balance of enjoying the bike and having fun on the bike as well as being competitive. And so it's a really good balance between the two of those things. And so, yeah, it's been fun. I think I have a lot of Italian to learn. still. But yeah, I think it'll be a fun journey, and they're great people to hang out with and spend time with. So they might teach me to like chill a little bit. That's kind of sort of the running joke, is that like,
oh really?
Yeah.
Explain. Are you more tightly wound than your Italian teammates?
I think a little bit.
What ways? Timeliness, or like, yeah. if there's a 10 a.m. group ride, are you there at 9:59?
Sort of, yeah. And like, you know, I like want to eat the things that I want to eat, and I like timing. Like, you know, yeah. I think, you know, there's a little things like that. Yeah. So I think
fair.
There's some chill Morgan could learn.
Okay.
from the Italians.
Cool. Do they have white shoes though? Seems like there's, I know you have white bikes now.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a white shoe crowd. They've got good style. I will say, I do think they did a phenomenal job on the kits. So
yep.
They did a good job.
And shout out Physique. They're a partner, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool shoes too.
Very cool shoes. Love my Physiques. Great, Morgan. What else should we talk about? This was fun. It was so good to get to know you a little bit.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, and yesterday was International Women's Day.
So it was.
This is a great day to film.
And actually, man, if there's one regret I have, and to be honest, we didn't have a ton of control over it ultimately. But during our time here, we had probably three more female guests lined up than we actually were able to schedule with, because I was sort of like shooting for the stars with the guests that I wanted while here, because they're here in Girona. So for example, Allison Jackson and I were going back and forth for weeks, and it was always like one day off. And then we missed her by one day, and she's not coming back for a little while cause she's off doing her classics campaign. But, yeah, we just came up a little bit short on the female guest list. We've had a few women on the show while here that have been awesome, but it's definitely been a little bit more unbalanced than I would prefer. So I appreciate you being game and willing. But that said, in light of it being International Women's Day, yeah. I would love to hear who some of the women are that inspire you, whether they're locals here, or even in a context broader than that.
Oh my gosh, there's so many. And it's funny because I always tell people, because I came to sports and cycling so late, that like I don't know the men's peloton. Like I only know the women's peloton. Yeah, like cool. I only follow women's cycling.
That's great.
Yeah, but I think like people in my life, as far as cycling goes here in Girona, like Veronica's been huge. And I think, you know, watching her come up in the sport has been awesome. I also am like next door neighbors, like can touch out the door to Heidi.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Fun. Yeah. So Heidi and Wade are like right there.
That's great.
And she's been like just the best, like gravel mentor, even though she doesn't race gravel full time, but you know, maybe one day.
Uh-huh.
So I think those are my two kind of in Girona, like, wow. And I think, I mean, as far as gravel cyclists in general, women, like there's so many people I look up to. It was funny. My dad just the other day, and I hope this is an accurate fact, but he came up to me after Sandoval. He's like, did you know that like Carolyn Schiff won Unbound at like 37? I was like, and we were just going on about how cool that is and awesome. And she was obviously super impressive last year and is just an impressive athlete. So there's plenty of people in the women's gravel world that I look up to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's cool that in this corner of the sport, it seems like careers can be a lot longer just because oftentimes the races are a lot more attrition oriented, especially in the US. Do you keep much of an eye on the US racing scene? Like, are you a fan of the sport to a degree where you pull up results whenever, like for example, when BWR Arizona happened last weekend, did you check on the results?
Well, I checked on the results because G was over there racing. And so I had to know. But yes, I was like extensively following, clicking the refresh on the Instagram to see what the stats were. But no, I do. I definitely follow. I think the Lifetime Grand Prix is definitely a series that I look at and think like, wow, like those, like that's cool. And I like to kind of follow people. I'm a big fangirl. Like I think that's a lot of how I learned about gravel, and I'm still learning about gravel. And so I think following what other people are doing and how they're doing it is huge. So yeah, definitely following cycling in the US, gravel cycling, and who knows, maybe I'll get back there eventually.
Yeah. Is the Grand Prix of interest? Could you see yourself racing the Grand Prix sometime?
I would. Yeah. I mean, I think that's like a dream. It would be really cool. But I also always said, like, I have no interest in racing it if I don't think I can be competitive in it.
Okay.
So yep. Because it's a lot of money, it's a lot of commitment, it's yeah. a lot of time. So, we'll see how, you know, things shake out, but, yeah, it would be cool to race gravel in the US and like be a part of the European gravel community, kind of be a part of the US gravel community and like, yeah, spread both sides.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a hypothetical, but do you think you would try to stay here and just travel back to the US if you were doing more of a US based schedule?
Yeah. I've actually thought, of course, thought about these things. spent too much time thinking about gravel. And yeah, I have, you know, I think I have family there that's still there and would probably try to do that. And even last year, I was hoping to go to the US Nationals. And I was going to go stay with, I have an aunt in Park City, and was going to go stay with her and then go and do that. But they all ended up getting COVID. So I didn't go do that.
Yikes.
But yeah, there's some places I might go and find a home in the US.
So you think Nationals this year? Maybe.
I would like to, but it's expensive and in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But I and would
about
like to.
That course is about as different from a European style gravel race as you could get.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I've heard not the most beautiful course either.
Yeah, it's just kind of like a super wide washboardy sand trap.
Kind of unbound, you know?
I would
not
say
that I know either.
Yeah, I would say so. Because it doesn't have much climbing. And it's just sort of like a beat down at all times, despite that, because the surface is so junky. Mm. Like there aren't very, at no point you're like, oh, we are hauling ass right now. It's just like, it requires 25 extra watts to go the same speed as you would on a more normal gravel surface, I guess. So, yeah, if you're into suffer fests,
yeah,
both physically and mentally, I think, 'cause last year there was some serious crosswind too. But yeah, it's very different than the
gravel here.
Yeah.
But there was big prize money last year, which is why I thought, you know, like I remember thinking there's not that many people signed up. There's tons of prize money. Like, yeah. Heck, let's go to Nebraska. why not?
Yeah.
But who knows? So maybe it'd be fun.
Fair enough. Cool. That was fun. Congratulations on your success and being in this phase. In some ways, I'm jealous of people that are at this stage of their career where they're getting to go through the exploration process. It's cool. I remember, obviously I did it at a very different age, but it's a really special time. And particularly when you're having the success that you are, enjoy it, soak it in.
Thanks. Yeah, definitely figuring it out. And to anyone listening, that's also figuring it out. Gravel is a good place to do that. And, yeah.
Cool. Where can people follow you?
Instagram, Morgan_Aguirre.
AGUIRRE.
Yep, that's it. Yeah.
Sweet. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
Hello again, everyone. Thank you so much for listening today. And a big thank you to Lily Hardman, formerly Lily McKelvin, for editing the show each and every week. Also, a big thank you to Nicole Baker for producing the show every week. She takes off tomorrow for Uganda, which I am very sad about, but also very proud of her for. It's been far too long since we recorded an episode with her as guest and provided all of you with an update on her amazing work. She's certainly on the more modest side of the spectrum, and it can be a long process to convince her to come on the show as a guest, but I'm hoping that when she gets back from this most recent trip, she'll be game to provide all of us with an update of the awesome stuff she's doing over there. But until then, we have the Mid-South recap later this week, along with
a good interview. One more interview from Girona with an up-and-coming pro. Not up-and-coming. He's very much arrived. Burst onto the World Tour scene this year. Someone I'm a big fan of. Got to snag a couple rides with this winter, which I think you'll enjoy very much. As a reminder, please do provide us with voice memos if you attended Mid-South Gravel and would like to share a little bit of your experience. Stay tuned to my YouTube for some video to go along with this audio from today's interview, but also some video, some behind the scenes, or I should say from within the race video of Mid-South. I had a camera rolling for the last 18 miles of that race, and it was eventful, dramatic, to say the least, especially with that single track in there. So head over to YouTube to check out all kinds of fun video content, both from the podcast and from racing. Lastly, don't forget to check in on the Friday quizzes over on the Adventure Stash Instagram if you want to stay more up to date with the podcast on a weekly basis. And other than that, we will catch you in a few days with that Mid-South recap. Thank you so much for listening.